bite me.
Hello and welcome to Bite Me. My name's Julia Steyer.
And I'm Bacola Ogunmola.
And I love vampires.
And I do not.
And Bacola actually found us our film today.
We
finally found the energy to watch a movie again.
Will we regret it soon? Who knows?
I don't think so. It said it was like an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. But I'm really excited about this because it sounds like a really good
film.
And yeah, thank you so much. If you've been tuning in this season, we appreciate you joining us on this journey. If you've been rocking with us from the beginning, when Julia used to not like blonde men and now she is fully committed to a blonde man that sometimes she's very mean to.
I am never mean to him. Sure. I'm stopping this narrative right now.
But like, thank you so much for rocking with us, you know, for being with us. Shout out to Mama Catherine.
Shout out to Sam. I don't know. You always leave him out.
Oh, Ralph.
But No. You always shout out Ralph. It is poor Sam that gets left out most of the time.
Yeah, but I don't know if Sam listens to this. Okay, well, both Sams. So shout out to the Sams. My brother and my sister-in-law are both named Sam. They know who they
are. Not confusing at all at Not family confusing. Reunions,
No,
I'm
no,
sure.
no. We just go Sams so that both of them turn around. It's really great. Yeah, and shout out to my parents who are now country. They are in the country.
Again. Oh, they're back.
Yeah, they're back. They came back.
Did they bring peanuts?
They better have, because I texted them and told them that you wanted it. And I told them that Randy wanted it, too. So
I was like, otherwise, I got a ticket.
You want to send them behind back? You like, I'm sending you back to Africa. Give me them peanuts. Stop playing games with me, Mr. and Mrs. Ogunmola. Stop playing games. No, my dad wouldn't do you like that. He got you the goods.
Thanks.
I should have asked for some more stuff, but I was tired. My mom was like, do you want anything from
Are you getting a new dress? I feel like every time your parents come back, you have a new dress.
I don't want a new dress because I haven't worn any of the old ones. I don't want a new dress. Fair. It's really great and I love my culture and I love African garb, but like, where am I going? You know, what is she doing? You know? So I can't be held accountable for that.
My favorite quote is, I was listening to one from when I was editing and you were like, I'm always in colorful stuff, but people just go, she's African. And I
was that's a word right there. Like, that's a real thing. They're just like, oh, yeah, that makes sense for her. And I'm like, cool, bet, dope. Anyway, so we're watching
Bit.
It is a 2019 horror comedy, and this is the synopsis. A transgender teenage girl on a summer vacation in Los Angeles fights to survive after she falls in with four queer feminist vampires who try to rid the city streets of predatory men.
And what did you say after you read that log line out there?
I said, what did I say?
You said, why didn't we write this?
Oh, I said, why didn't we write this? Like, this feels right up our alley. Like, I'm really excited, actually, about this. The first thing I really said, because I looked at the cast list, and there's a woman named Izzy in, like, and it's a black woman.
In the main lineup.
In the main lineup. And I went, a black woman with a name.
She goes, we're watching it.
We're watching it. So that was my deciding vote.
Honestly, that is how you should make decisions. That's how I make decisions.
My last year of grad school, even though I'm a small child, my last year of grad school, we were supposed to watch like movies. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to watch any movies on this like top 300 list of movies we're supposed to watch unless it has a person of color with a name and a plot line.
She watched three movies.
I watched Moonlight three times.
That's it?
I watched Moonlight three times because you're supposed to watch two movies a week. And I had to watch Moonlight three times. I actually had to like let go of it for a week because I was watching Sabrina, the like old school Sabrina with Audrey. And like there was like some other movies that I was like, I'll just watch it even though they're like.
Oh, I thought you were saying you had to let Moonlight go. I thought you were like, and it was finally time to.
No, I had to stop watching it. I watched it so many times. It got out of control.
She didn't know about Vampire in Brooklyn yet.
It wasn't on the list. You think Vampire in Brooklyn was on the list of 300 movies by the sir in our school that teaches that class? Exactly. You know he wasn't going to put that on that list. Anyway, yeah, so I'm really excited about this. What do you think the movie is going to be about?
Well, it's from 2019.
Yes, it is.
What I think it's going to be about.
Oh, well, not about, but like, yeah, what do you
like,
think
what am I looking forward to in it? I was just about to regurgitate the log line to you. Be like, well, actually, I have a pretty good idea. Yeah. No, I think as something that we've discussed a lot is how kind of the newer ones tend to have the more like non-traditional vampire elements. Mm. So I think we're going to find something new. I mean, trope-wise, I don't really know. I feel like there's going to be some male thing. Like, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's going to be their mad, like their powers only work on men, which is why they're like, oh, we can hunt them, you know? I don't know if there's going to be something about, I'm curious why they specifically have it be a transgender character and not just cast a transgender actor, because they made that distinction, which makes me think that there's something to do with gender and vampire powers that they're trying to explore. Because otherwise, I think they would just like, cast a transgender person and just say a character falls in. You know what I mean? So just because they're specifically calling it out does make me wonder if that's going to have an impact on the plot.
I feel like maybe there was like a hate crime that might have happened. And now these four women are like, these four vampire women are like,
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I that would be the best for me. Like, I feel like that I would enjoy that, watching that, watching some justified, you know, anger towards people that are committing hate crimes. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
But
I wonder too if it's something about acceptance. So if we have a transgender female character, because they didn't say if it was transgender male, female. And if there's something in there where these men hating vampires are like, no, you identify as female. So you are a female, you know what I mean? Like, and if that person is experiencing, like what you said, like a hate crime, and if it's kind of, a way of using that to reinforce, no, you are what you say you are. I was like, I wasn't sure how to word it, but I can see that being a really powerful take on showing that, of being like, no, we hate men. You are not a man. You identify as a woman. You are a woman. You are with us. Yeah, like you.
That'd
you know.
Be nice. I like that. That would be a really cool take. That'd be a fun take. I feel like it's up to date enough. Like, it's 2019, so it's interesting because I'm trying to see how far away from things we've moved, and like if things don't work, like, you know what I mean? There was such a reckoning, you know, in the last 4 years. So I want to know if there, cause you know, if you watch a movie or something from 10 years ago, you're like, that would not be made now. Or like if you rewatch, like everybody is rewatching America's Next Top Model and being like, this is terrible. It is terrible. It is really terrible. But, I'm interested to see what it looks like from then to now. And
I see what you mean. This could be made today.
Yeah, like if it could be made today, and I would be pleasantly surprised if it could be. I don't know where they could go wrong with the with the plot lines that we just thought of, but yeah, I don't really know where they could go wrong if they are on the like the good side. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no better way to say that. Like, if you're on the good side, like, then I don't know how you could do it wrong. You might miss some points and you might be imperfect, but like, that is human and I don't mind that. I'm hoping that it doesn't veer so far off that is uncomfortable.
I think that's like such an interesting point of like, I wonder what stance they'll take. I do think they're gonna take the stance that we just described. However, I worry that it's gonna be incredibly cheesy because we have never heard of this movie until today. And I feel like it was something that was dealing with identity and had been done really, really well, it would have exploded. And people would have been like, oh, what a unique take.
Yes, but baby girl, it got a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, that makes me hopeful. And I will say for it is that it's on Amazon Prime, right? And so Amazon, I think it could just be a victim of too much content.
Yeah, too much content. Yeah. So I'm hoping for the best, but like, It looks cute. It looks very like,
it looks very Bite Night. What is that thing called?
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Night Street. We've watched so many movies, you guys. But the one with Megan Fox and Sydney Sweeney. It seems very much like that.
I can't believe you were
Bite Night.
I don't remember, but like, wow, those are the people you thought of. Because I was thinking,
just like aesthetic wise.
Okay, yeah, because they were in one scene.
But they really advertised the crap out of them being in it. So that's why I... Hold on. You keep talking while I look it up.
They were on... who else was in it? Alfie. When he first met me, I was wanting... Alfie Allen was in it. Did you know
what words just came out of your mouth.
Alfie Allen. Alfred Allen. He was in Game of Thrones.
As who?
As the dude that gets beat up by, I was about to say Renesmee, by Ramses.
Oh.
The light skin.
Theo?
Oh. Alfie? Oh, his name in the show?
No, his name in real life is Alfie, right?
Yes,
isn't it? What's her, that singer's brother?
Lily Allen's little brother, like the singer that sang "When You First Met Me," I was on the song I would just started singing.
No, yeah. Well, I don't know any of her music.
Wow.
Wait, he's in. You hold heard on, it sorry. Here, I'm folks. So
blasphemy.
I'm so straight up blasphemy. At what this show, movie was.
I don't know.
Clearly,
if it's important.
I have to do a better job with our socials.
No, she's doing a great job with our socials. She runs our socials. She edits our movies. I mean, she edits our podcast. I really am
Night
just here
teeth.
For the
it was called Night teeth.
I'm really just here for the vibes. Like, truly, I do nothing here except for go, oh my gosh, Julia, you're so pretty.
No, that's not what she says. She goes, oh my gosh, Julia, you are terrible and you've gotten no better.
But only when she's terrible and have gotten no better. I'm just an honest friend world, okay? And I think that there needs to be more of me out there.
I agree. Let's clone her.
Let's clone me. I already do have a couple clones. You've seen my nieces.
And they're all related to her.
Yeah. You've seen these tiny people. My little Demi Yo-Yo. Shout out to you. I know you're not listening to this, but let's chill.
So what kind of tropes do you think we're going to see in it?
I think it's going to be super modern. I don't think they're going to be super soakers, but I think they're going to be like water, like maybe like water balloons with holy water in it. Ooh. I think there's going to be garlic food, like garlicky food. I think there's going to be, we're going to see actual bites. I think we're going to see scared men.
I think we're going to see a lot of seduction. I think that's how they're going to kill them, is I think it's going to be like a promising young woman meets vampires.
Okay, fine. I don't like when we use the trope of seduction for like when women are beating men. I think that they should use speed, agility, and just straight up boss assness.
Yes, but the vampire trope uses seduction overall.
No, but that's, I would love if it was like, what is that manipulation you do with your eyes?
Oh, I forgot. I think you're using it on me right now.
I just did the
Why did you do the duck face with
that,
it?
That's the face that my
compulsion.
Friend, compulsion. That's
I told you were using
face.
It on me.
That's the Riz face that a lot of my male friends
oh,
use.
Oh no.
It makes me uncomfortable.
I almost tried to do it, but then I remembered you're still recording and I was like, I don't recording. Want any video proof of me attempting.
Oh, come on.
A Riz face.
Do it. What tropes do you think is going to be in it?
I kind of agree with you. Like, I feel like they're going to keep it pretty classic because I think that they're going to want the focus to be more of like the gender stuff rather than, oh, here's all the cool, funny ways we can bring in horror. Like, I don't think it's going to be, I'm curious that it's a horror comedy because I don't necessarily see this as being campy, but it might be. And I'm okay with that. If like the way they kill these men is just like really campy. But I also think that, and this is where I think a lot of vampire movies kind of made in 2019, 2020 are having a little bit of an identity crisis, is that I think they don't know whether they want to be aesthetic and sexy or campy because they're like, oh, we all know vampires. So you can make fun of things that everybody already knows the tropes of. And so now that vampires have become such a part of our storytelling, like sub genres, basically, I think a lot of people are realizing that they can now play with that because the rules have already been established. And something that comes out of that a lot of times is camp.
Yes.
Now, however, like we were just saying about Night Teeth, we also have this idea of vampires as this sexy thing. So we're exploring that aesthetic and the two don't necessarily go together.
Yeah. Sexy and camp or not. You know what I mean? Like, who are you? Molly Shannon? I love you.
But Night Teeth felt a little bit like it was trying, or yeah, that's what it's called. Night Teeth felt a little bit like it was trying to do sexy and camp. And I remember it falling a little flat for us.
Yeah, because it was leaning so far into the sexy that the camp didn't make sense. Like, they only were camp with the like,
the dudes, right?
The dudes and the like women just barely had on clothes and were like walking around in high heels. And just like,
and
know,
like, just like, being like, we're
like,
gonna
who did your hair? It's 2 a.m. Yeah. Like, what salon is open?
So I do worry about that. And I do think that we are, I don't even know if you can call it a trope, but I think we are going to see the trope of like sexiness.
Yeah.
And those more heightened colors. I've noticed that, like what we saw in Night Teeth and what we even saw in the pictures of this, of like the blues are really blue and the greens are really green, but then there's a lot of dark. So it's like this hyper, almost neonized coloration of the scenes because they're at night. And so it gives this sexy, almost nightlife feel to the whole movie, uh-huh. even if that's not the point.
I get it. Because it's so interesting because you just described that. And the first thing I thought about was Insecure. But Insecure is a comedy. Mm. And they made it work. And they were also sexy. But they also didn't have the added layer of vampirism. vampirism.
Well, and they were sexy in that they were talking adults. About their 20s, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were in their 20s. So, like, these might be children.
I get a teenager vibe yeah, as from in this.
And I like children. Just, you know.
Because I think it's going to be somebody who is new to town. I mean, it's the trope that you always see. The way they expose the other is by bringing in someone who is new to town and have them being like, whoa, something's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do agree with you. I think the four vampires save this person from some kind of crime. I feel like that's how their paths cross. Or it could go the opposite way. In that they're all at school together and these four vampires are like drawn to this person for some reason. And then they get in with them in that way. But I feel it more of a we saved them kind of way rather than like a Heather's, like we're bringing you into the group. Yeah.
Get in the car. Yeah. So I think that'll be cool. I'm interested to see where it leans. You ready to go watch it?
I am. I actually don't feel like I have too much to say about this just because I really do think that
I'm curious.
I'm curious, but I also think that things that were made 2017 and later have been such a mixed bag.
Mm.
We've loved some of them, like mm-hmm. Vampires versus the Bronx.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we've also had ones where we were just like, why? What? So like, I almost don't have anything to say because it's just been such a mixed bag.
Yeah. So this is exciting.
Let's go watch
it. We'll find out what kind of bag we get.
So go onto your Amazon Prime and go watch Bit. Bye.
Bite me.
And we're back. Okay, I just have to say right off the bat, I get really excited when I get anything right. And so the two things I did get right were everything was in fact like in neon. Mm-hmm. So I got the aesthetic correct.
Not everything. No, not everything.
I know, but there was a good chunk of stuff in neon.
I don't think it was. It wasn't like Night Teeth, though. I don't think it was that much neon. I think that the clothing wise and everything like that, I don't think it was that much neon. I think there were a couple of moments that you pointed out, and I understand, but no.
So they going back to when I said walkers. I love when I'm right.
I'm sorry.
But
they also were day walkers, so we got cool. a lot more scenes during the day as well.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
But I will say, and I was right also on, and I thought this was interesting, they actually never come out. So the main character's name is Laurel. She mm-hmm. moves to Los Angeles for the summer to hang out with her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets invited out by these like female vampires.
Mm-hmm.
They hang out with her. One likes her, so she bites her. And then the leader of the group named Duke is like, no, we should turn her. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was interesting is they kind of alluded to it a lot, but they never once said the word transgender or transitioned.
Oh, no.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
That they said it in the logline and not in the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they said it in the logline because I think otherwise we would have been really confused on a lot of like the references.
Yeah.
But one thing that I did appreciate is that I was right in that there was a moment where Laurel is like, Duke, the leader, is like, no, we never turn men. And Laurel's like,
what about me?
Yeah. Well, she's even like, are you worried at all about me or something? The other person, you know, Duke was like, men only corrupt. And Duke was like, nope, it never crossed my mind. And so I was like, oh, okay, so we were
and
right.
And then we moved on.
That they like were doing the, yeah. like, no, you are a woman, you know, no matter what someone tells you.
Yeah.
And but Cola was right in that Duke, she is a lesbian and she does this honestly really cool flashback to the 70s, which we'll dive into more later.
Yeah.
But Cola was right. That's something that triggers kind of Duke's story is a hate crime. Mm-hmm. It's in the 70s in New York and she is making out with another woman and some guy comes and pours his beer all over her and she like flips out her switchblade like a boss.
Yeah. Like a boss.
Like a boss. Like a Duke. Just kidding. But anyway, so give us a rundown on some of your thoughts. I just had to like word vomit that before I forgot.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really well done. Like in the middle of the movie, I looked up how Google described it and it was like witty, wry and nihilistic and gory, which is exactly what it was. It was nihilistic. The writing, I think, is super compelling. The directing, I think there is room for improvement, but I couldn't do a better job, but there is, you know what I mean? But there is room for improvement in the directing style. I think some of the images and some of the shoots, but there was this really cool flashback scene that was almost
so cool.
in my mind was very 2D. Like, I might be putting too much on it, like, but like, I think it was a style choice to have it that it was kind of like,
and like purposefully,
purposefully 2D. Flat, because that's how Duke was feeling at that time. So we see things kind of flat, like in different spaces that are almost built like, not like a set, but like, I don't like Lego. It's not like actually Lego pieces, but like, you know what I mean? Like backgrounds of like the store, the actual story that is being told. It was really, really cool. There are better ways to describe it, but like, I just am coming up short in that description. I really loved, there were parents in this movie. They were in two scenes, but they were
supportive
and active parents,
and also good actors. The mom was great.
Well, they're pretty famous actors. And Julia was like, I've never seen these people. And I'm like, you watch a lot of teen rom-coms, but these are adult actors and they act in adult movies.
She's like, so it makes sense.
Yeah. So that like, and you know what I mean by like just grown up people movies. Anyway. So
you did just say adult movies.
Yeah. But grown up people movies is what I meant. But like,
she meant dramas.
But so it was really lovely. Also, what's really great is that we think that her brother's going to turn out to be like this kind of douchey dude. He's really kind of the best of them, which is really so lovely.
Kind. And it's what was really interesting about just jumping off that is I do sometimes think in movies that they make, you know, the queer person can do no wrong, because mm-hmm. they're like, we want represent, you know, and understandably so, they're like, we want great representation. Yeah. In this one, they were like, no, we're treating her as much like we're treating her with the same characteristics we would treat any cis or straight character, like,
but like a flawed hero. They made her
a real person, yeah. Which I think was wonderful. And it, I mean, don't get me wrong, she actually was the irritating. Worst. Like, she's, and her, so annoying. Her brother had a great line where he was like, I always supported you becoming who you truly were, but it turns out who you truly are is a selfish bitch.
Yeah, which is like, honestly, at that point, so super funny. Justified. It's super justified. Like, she's not like, she as herself, like the character, is not, she doesn't have like an annoying voice or anything like that. It's more like she makes annoying decisions.
Well, and she
like abandons her brother. Her. Yeah, everything is about her. She literally abandons her brother on the first night she's there in LA. Doesn't tell him where she's going. His mom is like calling, like, where's Laurel? Going off like, bro. He's been living out here. They probably barely call him. But now all of a sudden, Laurel lives with them. And they're like, where is she? Is she okay? Is she eating good? And he's like, she's sick. He's like, let me take you to the hospital. She says no. He's like, are you hungry? She's like, no, I'm not hungry. He's like, you haven't eaten in 2 days. Sit down and eat this food. You know what I mean? Like, he's a good brother.
And he actually has a really powerful monologue kind of at the end where he was like, I moved away to have my own identity. And he's like, I love you. And I've always respected and supported your choices, even when people didn't understand it.
Yeah.
But you are emotionally draining. Refers to a fact that she tried to kill herself at one point, and how every time everybody calls him, it's always, how's Laurel? He's like, I can't remember the last time someone asked me how I was. And he's like, I don't need attention, but it's nice to be treated as like a human, because she comes home one day. She finally comes home. She's been like missing for like 4 days, just like, honestly, a very teenage move of like not realizing her actions like impact the emotions of other people as well.
Yeah.
And she's been like, I'm dealing with something. And he's like, well, your best friend who's been reaching out to you tried
to unalive himself.
And instead of being like, oh my God, I need to go home and see him, she goes, I think I need help.
Yes.
And her brother goes off. It was like,
I'm struggling. I need help. Not that she's wrong. She was struggling and she did need help. And she was tied up with these vampires. But like, baby, somebody else is dealing with something right now. Like,
that. And it was really interesting because because we were talking about how this kind of felt like it was Gen Z trying to write a millennial movie. And like, I feel like it was interesting in that I think a lot of times stories around, kind of like we were saying, it's like they always make the queer person and sometimes the person dealing with mental health like unflawed.
Yeah.
And this time it was really interesting to have them be like, no, you kind of have to own up to your shit, which was interesting and unexpected for this. Only because, like I said, it really did like feel very like Gen Z-y.
Yeah.
So it was fast. I would say this movie for me ebbed and flowed. Like, there were some moments where I was like,
this is slow.
This is slow. Like, I, you know, and there was a lot of conversations, like kind of as Bacola had said when we were watching it, that were a little bit static of like, focus on you, focus on me, focus on you, focus on me.
Directing wise.
But then there were also moments where I was like, I am so invested in this right now. Like, they had a lot of really good plants and payoffs.
Yes.
Like, they had this.
You're going to talk about the antidote?
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking too, like, the creepier one was they show this at the beginning.
The guy.
Yeah, they show this guy getting killed by, like, this group of vampires, and they are punishing the woman who was about to turn him. And Duke turns to this woman. They call her – you learn later that she is the first wife, so she was the first of Vladimir's wife, which we'll explain in a second.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're going to go in the hole for a year as punishment. And then you kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Laurel going to this party with the vampires, and she's standing above – like it looks like a vent almost – and she hears, like, a woman gasping. And then they just don't explain it. And it was so creepy.
It was eerie,
And then it comes back all together. They bring back the first mention of the first wife. And you're like, oh, that's the hole. Like, they're just, like, literally, like,
put her
living on top of her. And and then, and then there was one point where they turn Laurel and they give her this antidote. And they're like, hey, you have the option of taking this antidote and it'll turn you back into a human before you feed. Or you'll feed and become a full vampire. And she ends up not being able to take it because she likes they get like attacked and she runs away.
And then she comes back and saves them.
And she comes back and saves them. And that is how she ends up turning, is because she like kills the guys who are trying to kill them. And it, you know, that act triggers it. But later, Laurel, again, kind of being the worst, gets into a fight with her brother and bites him because she's been refusing to feed. So not only is she not like taking responsibility for her actions, she's also like it's putting other people in danger.
Yeah.
And so she bites her brother and she's like, crap, crap, because the number one rule Duke has is that you can't turn men. She was like, they already have power now and they abuse it. Can you imagine what would happen if they had
this type of power and didn't have to have no
Face the consequences.
Face the consequences.
Yeah. It was like no repercussions.
Yeah.
And so she brings her brother, Laurel brings her brother to Duke and it's like, I need you to give him the antidote. And Laurel's like, Duke is like, LOL, that's not a real antidote. It was just Everclear.
Everclear. And they scratched the like label off the bottle. And they were like, yeah, if you chose to take the antidote, we were just going to kill you. Which is wild to think. Which is wild. They were like, there is no antidote. You're a vampire. Once we bite you and you're back, you're a vampire. End of statement.
And it gave the illusion of choice too. And I feel like that was going to be, you know, in a different world, if she had kind of gotten along with them more, I think that would have been a manipulation tactic.
Yes.
Because I think she would have been like, well, you guys did this to me. I don't want to do this. And they would have been like, no, we gave you, the option and you chose. So definitely a manipulation tactic there.
Definitely.
But, and then at the end, I feel like I'm telling this all out of order.
Yeah.
But basically, the Everclear comes back and that you learn that the only way to kill a vampire is to burn their heart.
Yeah.
So the evil male vampire comes back to life.
Bloody
he pulls man. Laurel towards him. He's ready to kill her. And she holds up a lighter and blows Everclear out of her mouth and turns her lighter into like a flame
Molotov,
torch.
Yeah, like a Molotov cocktail type
or torch flame. It was crazy.
It was really good.
But yeah, do you kind of want to break down some of that Vlad stuff? Because a lot of that was really fascinating. And I felt like it was moments where we saw the backstory and where Vlad came back. Like that's for me is where things got interesting because it's when all the plants started to pay off. Because we brought back Vlad. We brought back the first wife. We even brought back the Everclear. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
So I would start the Vlad story in Duke's flashback, which we talked about a little bit earlier.
Wait, and can we talk about the entrance to the flashback too? It was so cool. And Bacola was so right. She was like, this is such a great way because it shows also the time.
Yeah.
So it just like turns into like a television set.
Like the old school television set where it was smaller. It wasn't like widescreen.
Yeah. Smaller, kind of staticky.
Yeah.
And then we zoom in and we're there with her in New York City and she's walking out. And there was one cheesy frame where she was like, and I was hungry and homeless. And it shows her sitting on like a single trash can.
Yeah.
Like alone in this kind of clean alley. And then she like pulls a piece of plastic over her and it was like
smoking. But it's very flat. As how I would describe it. And so in the flashback, you see that like Duke was like dealing with some stuff, runs away from home at 15, and then basically is like selling her body on the streets. And then finally she gets like a little bit more, she gets a little bit autonomy, gets a little bit more money, not like a lot more money. She's still living in
She has a small apartment, yeah. But she's working at like a record store.
So she's like pulling herself up, and she's at this party, makes out with this girl. This guy pours beer on her, which you mentioned earlier. And then she pulls out her switchblade like a boss, which you mentioned earlier. Vlad sees her and is like, she turns and goes, "That was the most beautiful person I'd ever seen in my life. I was so obsessed with him." And we're like, oh, she's bi. She's not bi. She's still gay. He is manipulating her. What is he doing?
He is using, glamour. They switch off between calling it compulsion and glamour in different vampire stories. But
so he was.
Wait, also, it would be, we have to acknowledge when they show him, they start playing Rasputin.
Yeah.
Rasputin. I died. Bacola was like, how did they get the rights to that?
I don't know how they got the rights
to that. The most iconic moment in cinema history I have ever witnessed. It was.
Yeah. Iconic.
Unhinged and iconic. But sorry, continue.
In my mind, we were going to start doing the dance from Just Dance.
I'm trying to do the dance.
It was beautiful. So after that, we...
Oh, and we learn about the wives.
We learn about the wives. So then after that, he glamours her. She come to find out she's not the first person he's done this to. So the first wife, whose name we actually never
get. Yeah, she's literally just called the first wife.
So the first wife, who we come to find out is the woman from that first scene that opens the whole movie, finds a guy, falls in love with him, tries to turn him into a vampire. He starts to use this power immediately, and she's like, we have to run away. And he's like, I'm coming, it's chill, I'm coming, but I love you so much, blah blah blah. And then that's when Duke like rips out, kills him, and so do the rest of the girls. That's the opening scene. So then we go, so now we find out who's in the hole, which is the first wife. Then when I know, but when Lolo has the fight with her brother, which you mentioned earlier, she tears open her neck so that blood is pouring in to the first wife's cell.
That was creepy.
It was creepy as hell. So the first wife, and we also got like a little insert shot to show that like your nails can grow on command from Laurel. So she tears open her neck to pour out blood for the first wife. The first wife comes up, fights Duke, and during part of that, she opens up Vlad Sputin's heartbeat because they can't burn
I'm sorry, did you just call him Vlad Sputin?
Vlad Sputin. Yep. What's his name?
Vladimir.
Vladimir. Sorry. Sorry. Vladimir. She opens, and so Vladimir comes back. Vlad
Sputin. Oh my God.
So Vladimir comes back up, and he's like, oh, you mad at me because I was glamoring you and the other wives? Well, you've been glamoring these other girls. And so come to find out, Duke's been like soft glamoring everybody else.
And you know what it's crazy though is that the way she was able to do it is she's been eating parts of Vlad
and absorbing his power, and he was like
she did it really subtly. And so at first we thought maybe it was the smoke and stuff, but then we were like, oh no, she's just been eating him. And that is something I've never seen in another vampire movie.
That's wild.
I was not, like, when we were talking about earlier, when we were like, oh, they're gonna stick to the basics, it was interesting because they did do what a lot of things did, is they right off the bat threw all the basics out the window. Because, like, you know, the guy's asking about being a vampire, and the first wife is like, oh, the sun only makes you kind of sick and it's bright. Garlic doesn't do anything. Holy water doesn't do anything. And crosses don't do anything. So it was like, I did appreciate that they were like, we know who's watching this.
Yeah.
Let's get those tropes out of the way.
Yeah.
Vampire Diaries kind of does the like rip your heart out thing. Mm-hmm. But this one went so far as to say you have to burn it.
Yeah.
But yeah, being able to like eat the charred remains of somebody and like slowly kind of absorb them.
It's wild.
That was crazy.
It's really cool though, because like what we realize is that most vampire movies and lore, they don't have a heartbeat. But in this one, their hearts are beating.
Yeah.
So when we think about the dilemma of, or the like overall theme and question of what does it mean to be human in this, like, especially with thought of like being a vampire and being able to take life force from another person, which is blood and blah, blah, blah. What is the thing that separates them from us? Is it just the blood drinking and that this is their like nutrients? Mm. Because you did have the question earlier. Julia was like, why can't they just use blood bath? Yeah. And I'm like, why not?
Yeah. Do they have to take a, is it the act of taking the life?
Yeah. Is it drinking from another life? Is it drinking from another being that's heart is beating? It's so interesting. So I thought that was really cool. And then, yeah, I don't know where I was in the like progression of the story.
That's the thing. As much as I was like, oh, it was slow at times, like us trying to re-explain it, I'm like, oh, a lot did happen.
A lot happened.
Tied together quite nicely.
Yes, it is. The plants and payoffs were wonderful. The characters were well built out. The like three girls were not done the best, but at least they were interesting and dynamic, and they were culturally different. Like, that's a point they really made. Like, they drove it a little home, but like, it was a bit much for me. There was a big flower in like the Latinx girl's hair, and like, she looked like she, I liked it because she had like cholo makeup and cholo like clothes on, and I love, like, you know what I mean, I love that. But it was the flower that really threw me off, because I was like, a white person dressed you, and I can't, I don't know if that's true, but like, it felt like it. But she looked fantastic makeup wise hair,
but I agree with you, they didn't really build out their personalities too much. It was more like they were visually dynamic.
Yes, visually dynamic. But I must say Izzy was pretty dynamic, because Izzy was the one that mistakenly turned her.
Yeah.
So Izzy was the black vampire character, and she wasn't built out completely, but we know that she's she directs music videos. We know that she visits her brother often.
Yeah, we got some backstory. We got like a, oh, this is how she lives a full life when she's not with these people. And it was interesting, because it did feel a little bit like, and I've heard this about female side characters sometimes, of they don't exist unless they're around the main character.
Yes.
And I felt that way for Roya and Frog. And Frog is the Latinx woman. But I agree. With Izzy, I do feel like I was like, oh, okay, I see the life she lives outside of the main characters.
Yeah.
The other two, not so much.
We know that Roya has a cat named Mr.
Kitty.
Mr. Kitty.
I think that's like all we know about them.
Yeah. And Frog is literally used to lure. Oh my gosh, we didn't even do the whole plot line of the Predators.
Oh, that's it's a little Edward Cullen-y in that they're like, it's interesting though, because at one point Laurel was like, do you kill? And she goes, yes, indiscriminately. But then goes on to describe how they actually sort it out. And so there's two ways, actually. The innocent people tend to be people they're attracted to
because they taste better.
So there is kind of that like evil part.
Yeah.
But the other one is they tend to go after men who've done bad things.
Yeah.
Like
sexually assaulted people.
Yeah. Or one guy's being like a peeping Tom on some like innocent girl. And so
Dude
comes and gets him. So they do, I almost would have liked them better if they had stuck with that. But I think that almost maybe would have made them too righteous.
Yes,
so I think
exactly.
I do get why they also have like, no, just straight up kind of evil.
Yeah. And what I really like is, and there's some triggering things in here, because like what I really like is that what's her name, the main Duke said, we're a terrorist group at best.
Bacola died at that.
Died at that, because I was like, oh, that is so self-aware to understand that you were not the good guy in this.
Yeah.
And she doesn't think she is the good guy. She's not trying to be the good guy. She's just like, there's some wrongs in the world and we're going to try to fix our little corner of the world. But other than that, like, shit's happening and that's not my problem, really. Like,
and she does say at one point, she's like, I dream of a world where every woman is a vampire and it's the men who are afraid to jog at night, which is like, ooh.
Yeah.
But I will say, so something that didn't quite click for me, and I was having a hard time naming it as we were watching it, but as I've been sitting here, I've been thinking it through a little bit more, is so these must be the only vampires in the world, because at one point Duke goes, we can never let a man be turned, and they make it sound like it was just Vlad and then the four of them, you know, whoever Duke, because Duke even says, I decide who becomes a vampire next, and then Laurel. But it doesn't, there was no sense of like vampires in the world, if that makes sense. Like, it really felt like, oh, these are, yeah, like four vampires or five vampires, you know, that live in this corner. But like, I don't know, it felt weird to me that they like never interacted with another group of vampires, that no one was like coming to check them and be like, no, you can't be killing all the male vampires and or not making any men. And they even said like this like little group of incels, they called them like subredditors, had decided that there was a cabal of vampires roaming Los Angeles, and which was funny because Duke goes, well, broken clocks, am I right?
Yeah.
Which, you know the saying, a broken clock is right at least twice.
Yeah.
But I did feel, I think that's something I don't like is when the vampirism feels isolated, because it just feels like, where are you in this world?
So I'm gonna combat that, because in the first Twilight, did we know there were other vampires in the world?
Yes. Because he even says, my family's different than the others. Yeah. Like, and then they meet the other vampires that come in are the threat.
Oh, yeah, that is the first one.
Yeah, like, having other vampires is a huge part of Twilight.
But, like, it wasn't like you saw the whole world of vampires until the second one.
But so I don't even need a whole world. I just needed someone from the outside or, like...
I think that would have been too much. You listen to the plot we just said. We didn't even get to the incels until just now, and we almost forgot about them when they're in the log line. Like, you know what I mean? I think that if they had another one, then it would have to do with like a vampire council, because they have to answer to someone.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think they do. I think Vlad was like this weird one. They like described him as a weird one-off. No,
but they talk about the other vampires. They talk about like something, Vladimir, like a...
That was his name.
No, there was another
scene. That was his name, Casimir something. I think that was his full name.
No, I think those were different vampires. Oh,
okay. I thought it was him.
I thought it was different locational vampires. Like, this is the LA vampires, and like, in this turf, we only have women and blah, 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 da, da, da. I would not be surprised.
I would love to see a vampire turf war.
Yeah.
I would love to see a vampire mafia.
I would not be surprised if they did another one, if there was like a... like once the, like the east the and like make it like a coastal war, so like the west coast vampires, which are these women, and it's in a very specific place, was like up against like the Atlanta vampires or like the New York vampires or the Charlotte North Carolina vampires, I don't know, or the DMV vampires. I'm done, obviously you can tell I'm
do you want to list any more states in the United States?
I said the DMV, that was three more. You're welcome. But like I think that the plot was already too much.
Yeah, it was like, pretty complicated.
It was very complicated. It was enjoyable. It's just having to describe it back.
It was enjoyable, but I also think that they could have gotten to it a little faster. Like I said, they really dragged out that beginning for some reason with her and her friend, and then her and her parents when she's leaving, and then even her, like the first scene with her and her brother went on too long.
The first scene with her and her brother was a little awkward. It did go on too long. I completely agree, but they had to set up. I wish they showed a little bit more with the friend. It wouldn't have felt so long if the shooting was more dynamic, because they have to set up that the friend is important to her and that she lets him down, so that the brother argument. So that plant and pay, I'm telling you, this person's a very good writer. Like, as in like the plant and payoffs.
They know structure.
They know structure, and it's enjoyable, and it's not confusing unless we have to describe it back. Like, if you watch it, you're like, oh, that makes sense, or blah blah blah. By the time you think to forget something, it's already been brought back. Mm-hmm. So it's really like well done in that way,
which is why I said like there were moments that I really was like, I am locked in.
Yeah, directing is that's what was if there was more dynamic shots, it would have been great. Also, they could fly. Not great. But they had to bring in the flying, so that at the end last fight scene, you know where they came from. So that's where Duke comes down after flying, because remember the girl was trying to run away from Laurel, the girl that was smoking was trying to run away from Laurel, and then the Duke had to like fly in, and she was like, you've been following me?
Yeah, so I'm going to translate that, because we...
Sorry.
There's like this girl vomiting on the sidewalk, and Laurel stops and is like, oh, are you okay? And she's talking with this girl, and at this point, it's been established that Laurel hasn't been feeding, and Duke has warned her, like, you're going to make a big mistake, and you're going to lose control. And so she sees this girl throwing up, and she's kind of like stopping to help her. But then she like can hear the girl's heartbeat in her neck. And at one point, the girl like falls forward into her, and Laurel bites her. And that's where
Duke tries to bite her.
No, she bites her.
No, she tries to bite her and then she misses.
Oh.
And then the girl is trying to run away and be like, oh my gosh, help, help.
Oh,
and then,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
she
right.
just comes down and like kills her.
Oh yeah. And then Duke comes down and kills the girl. You're right. Yeah. See, there's so much stuff is happening that my brain's already like, what? Yeah. Duke comes down and kills her and is like,
you can't.
Laurel, see, this is why you have to feed. Like, if that girl started running around
telling people about us, it would have been a problem.
And she warns her. And she goes, and the longer you go, the bigger a mistake you're going to make, which was the setup for her biting her brother.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they did have a lot of really good, I would say, plants and payoffs. Yeah. But it was just, I think it just some things needed to be tightened. And then I also think, too, something that I found distracting, and I think you did too. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I feel like we talked about it a lot.
How dare you?
And if I were to put words in Bacola's mouth, it would be Julia's the best.
Oh.
And gosh. I love her so much.
Wow.
But in this case, I will say I had a hard time placing what time it was in.
Yes.
Because we truly, like, as the movie went on, we were like, oh, okay, it's actually later than we thought. So originally, we thought it was somebody trying to recreate the 90s because, like, everyone's smoking, is in plaid. But the biggest thing was is that no one had cell phones.
So
at first.
No, so I first thought that it was 2019, 20, whatever the movie was made in. And that these Gen Zers were trying to dress like Gen X.
Oh. Because, like, how everything is coming back right now.
Like, everything's coming back. Then I was like, oh, we haven't seen a cell phone yet.
So we're like, great, it's the 90s.
It's the 90s. Then we see a cell phone.
Then we see a not advanced cell phone.
Yes, it's like the first iPhone. And we're like,
the clunky. And she looks like, honestly, she looks like she's holding like a BlackBerry. Like,
yes, the mom looks like she's holding a BlackBerry. And the girl looked like she was using like an earlier iPhone.
Like a clunky.
But it wasn't that bad. It wasn't like the curved ones. So I thought it was in the early aughts.
But it was small because it was
yeah.
Like that's
so
why
it's
I think
like 2010.
I know her mom was talking on a house phone, and I think Laurel was the one talking on a BlackBerry at first. But then I think it did end up being
it was an iPhone.
It was so weird. Sorry, go on.
Anyway, like so then we realized that technology was the thing that we were using to ground ourselves in whatever time period this was. It wouldn't have been a big deal, and I wouldn't have even thought about it. Except for the fact that we use cell phones.
Well, but I will also say too, like what you're saying, we were using technology to base it. Then out of nowhere, there's a FaceTime scene with a front-facing camera. And we were like, well, that shoots you up like, to at least 2014.
Yeah. Which is fine. That still makes sense.
But it's just crazy the fact that we started in the 90s.
I know. And then like bounced around. But I think that has to do with a lot with also fashion. And yeah. And
they
I
were
think
dressing like the early
2000s. But then also what it was is that the vampires dressed like what they wanted to dress like in whatever decade they had already existed in.
Oh.
So like I think that Izzy was dressing more like the 90s because that's probably around the time she was actually a teenager.
I disagree. I think that Izzy.
It was a mistake.
No. I think Izzy was one of the most recently ones turned because she was still visiting her brother.
That's true.
And she was able to get away with still looking young.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think she was a teenager in the 90s because then her brother would have been like,
why do you look like a child?
Yeah.
Got it.
Though, Exhibit A.
Thank you. I
am
a child.
Look at that beautiful skin.
Well, I am 20, so like that makes sense. You ain't have to laugh that hard. How dare you? She's still going. Wow. Y'all hear this? But yeah, so like it wasn't that big of a deal to me to, like, place it.
I think Duke's clothing was all over the place, though. She was the one that was really throwing it off because she had the braids and the poof and then the bright white jacket. And then Laurel had the cutout boots that were very, like, 2010.
Yeah. I hated Duke's costume for most of it except for the flashbacks.
She looked amazing in the flashback.
She looked amazing in the flashback.
We were like, oh.
But it's like the old, like,
she looked like Twiggy.
Oh, maybe.
She's kind of like, Twiggy and
it's
slash
like
R.
The tribal braids on the side with the poof in the middle.
Oh, I didn't mean her current day. I meant her flashback days.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She Twiggy, very Twiggy. Yes, like very pretty, like
severe,
silk
eyeliner.
The like slick hair. It was very, very cute. And she's like,
But yeah, her current day was confusing.
It was very confusing. I didn't like it, but I get it because she was trying to look like a woman in power.
Yes.
And she looked like a character from The 100.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's okay.
Yeah.
The two main characters get married in real life and didn't tell anybody.
There's one.
It makes me so happy. It does. Eliza Bob, I love you. They were like, we're going to keep it private. They were like, oh, we're married. And I'm like, no, what do you mean? They have two kids.
That's insane. They have were the kids a secret too?
No. They have, I think she was like pregnant in the last season. They're like, what? You're pregnant? She's like, yeah, I've been married for 2 years. They're like, married to who? And they're like, that guy. And he's like, what? Yeah.
Yo, I can imagine the assistant group chat popping off after that revelation.
Oh my gosh. It was probably wild.
Duke reminded me of, and I can't remember the show, but there's a role that Natalie Dormer plays. And I can't remember what it's in but she has tough girl braids. That's exactly what it is. It's the like, I'm a tough warrior.
Half of my head is braided.
But that poof on top. I used to do that
to my old roommate all the time. Yeah.
But yeah, I think overall, I would give it like out of 5, a 2.5. I don't know that I would sit through it again.
Mm-hmm.
And nor do I know that I would, or think that I would necessarily like recommend it to anybody who wasn't invested in vampire stuff.
Mm.
But I do think it's a really interesting, I would recommend it as like a, honestly, a structure study.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, I mean, I take a shot every time I say plant and payoff, but for like a really good lesson in plants and payoffs, like honestly, because I really do think that that's where its strengths were. And I think that's actually a really hard thing to do in screenwriting, because I think you worded it so perfectly of like, right as we were about to forget about it, it came back.
So
that's kind of my overall thoughts on it. It was a little slow in spots, really engaging in some spots.
Yeah.
A lot of things that I think I would have changed, but really glad that they tried something new. They were like, let's play with gender and gender identity and see how that would impact it. And so it really feels more like that they were looking for not necessarily a new way to make a vampire movie. It felt like they were looking for a way to make a movie about gender through a different lens.
I love that. Yeah. And humanity, which is what all the vampire movies are about, I think. But I think I would give it a 3 to a 3.25. I think it's for all the reasons that you're saying, that it's a good study in like plant and payoff and all the and structure. And like, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was dynamic. The only reason I'm taking points off and then I'm like, I'm not, you know, is the shots, literally the shots. And I would be interested to like take this to like a film school and be like, hey, how could we make these shots more dynamic? What could we do? Because the writing, the first couple scenes were not great. Like writing wise, I don't think they were great. I think they were a little long. I think they could have been cut. I think that in trying to build character or like relationship, they overshot it, but it got a lot tighter the more we progressed through the movie. And I think that they truly think that there were rewrites happening like in the moment. And that those beginning scenes with the friend and that first scene with the brother was like shot early on. And then once people were like, I understand my character, we can cut this line, we could just make this a look, we could do da da da, that made it so much more dynamic. What it could have benefited from is having a creative producer who was like, cut this, cut that, move this here. That would have, but like structurally and storytelling wise, really good, solid movie.
Yeah, you know what? I'll move mine up to it like a 3. Yeah. Like a 2.75 /3. Yeah, like, yeah.
Averaged it out to a 3 between the two of us.
Because there were a lot of moments that I was just like, I'm in.
Yeah.
And a lot of moments where I was like,
Yes, and that's okay. If this is this person's first film, I don't know you, but I'm extremely proud of you. Like, it is really, really wonderful work. If this is your second film, I'm still proud of you. It's really wonderful work. I think that they would benefit from getting a mentor, or they might have a mentor already, getting another mentor. As in, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that they got a lot and they've gotten all the things that they need, but if they go to like another person, that other person can, with a different specialty, or that just sees, that doesn't know you. So I think that for me, whenever I have like, especially for acting, when I have an acting mentor, after a while, they just think everything I do is great.
Mm.
until I move on to someone else and they're like, you have trouble with this. Your eyes aren't focused. You aren't doing this, blah, blah, blah. Which is what, like, at least my new acting coach is doing. She don't know me from Adam. And she's like, you're great. You have these trouble spots. And I'm like, dang, I just started talking. Like, and she's like, these are some of your trouble spots. I'm not saying you're not good. I'm just saying these are what I notice.
This is what,
like,
you improve on. Yeah.
This is what you improve on. But only someone that doesn't know you can see this, whereas other people will be like, oh no, that's just Bacola. She does that thing with her eyes.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Yes, 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 so yes. Like, that's what
becomes,
I mean,
it becomes a Bacola-ism
instead of a something that I could work on in my art form. So that's what I mean by, like, if they had a creative AD that was like on the shot side or maybe on the editing side that could be like, maybe let's cut these things, maybe let's shoot this.
Development executive.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, Julia's really great at that. Whenever I write something, she's like, this is great. Cut this, move this here, boom this here. Doesn't that flow better? And I can't be mad because she's right.
And because she asked me to do it.
Yeah, I'm like, that's true. Yes, I do come and I go, help me, fix it, please.
Fix it.
And she does.
Please, man. Oh, yeah. You're very kind. And on that, it's hard to do it off your own work too.
Yes. Yeah.
That it's really hard to be objective about your own stuff.
Yeah.
Because again, you're like, well, maybe it's just me. Or, but that's when someone else can look at it and be like, no, here's the good stuff. Here's the not as strong stuff.
Yeah.
And I think no matter what stage you're at, no matter who you are, I think everyone needs outside eyes.
Yeah. Some of the best writers, directors, they all have people that they work with that are like, they're new, they're fresh, they're up and coming. And they go, is this good? And that person has to be honest and be like, it has strong parts. It's not great. Yeah. And like, it doesn't matter if you're Steven Spielberg, you need someone to look at your work and be like, it ain't there, Steven.
Yeah. And if you are able to take notes, that's who succeeds.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And not have an ego about it. And I think that this artist, I can obviously tell from the nihilistic thing that they wrote, can see the world in a really beautiful, sad way that I think a lot of people can relate to, but it's so succinct and so daring about how they tell their story. So I'm gonna look up this writer director and look at what other work they've done, because I'm impressed with the art that they're making.
I feel like that's a huge endorsement.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. I think it's a great showcase of a movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think it's really wonderful. And it should have probably been a little bit more popular. But the problem is, whenever we watch stuff, this doesn't have a huge studio behind it. There's no way they have a huge studio behind it. So whatever budget they were making this on, it's also really impressive.
Yeah, I do agree with. I really do.
Because if they had a studio behind it, it would be completely different. It would look different. It would feel different. But it wouldn't be the same story. I think it would be solid, but it wouldn't be the same story.
It would have been, I think, really mild.
Yeah.
Had a studio been behind it.
Yeah. And polished. And like, six people would have been like, cut this, move this. No, this is, the audience isn't smart enough to get this. And we were there rocking with them.
I also think that a studio would have been afraid to tackle a story like this.
Yeah. Which
is just like an unfortunate reality.
Yeah.
So that's why you got, honestly, I mean, I know I'm a little biased because I work in indie production, but that's kind of why you got to keep
making work.
Keep making the stuff and being like, no, find a home for your voice, because someone out there will make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the lesson is, make art. Don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk, honestly. Well, I feel like you gave such an impassioned speech right there. Do you have any last thoughts, or you're like, nope, I put it all on the table?
It's all on the table, the chair, some of it's on the wall.
Oh my God. She is talking about her opinion, not
That was good.
I had a good time. I'm going to keep an eye on this writer.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, thank you guys for watching and listening to us talk about Bit.
Yeah.
Go check it out on Amazon Prime. This has been Bite Me, the podcast. You can follow us on socials. Mostly, I think it's Instagram, at Bite Me, the podcast. We are produced by Players, Performers, and Portrayers, which you can learn more about us at playersperformersandportrayers.com. My name is Julia Steyer.
I'm Bacola Ogunmola.
Bye.